listening to LSU Daily with Matt Moscona, your home for all the latest Tiger news. Part of the Guarantee Podcast Network.
Okay, let's get it. It is LSU Daily. I'm your host, Matt Moscona. Glad to have you aboard with us here. Tiger basketball team had another disappointing loss against Missouri. Regrettably, we'll spend some time on that. But the Tiger baseball team is back at it for a long weekend coming up out at the box. Jay Johnson met with the media on Thursday to preview the weekend. Long weekend for LSU. They're going to play four games. So Friday to Monday with Butler and Central Connecticut State is how they'll do it. So Butler, then two against Central Connecticut State. Then on Monday, they'll play Butler again. So you get four games. And then obviously, considering they played on Tuesday, and then they play next week in the midweek as well on Wednesday, that would be the four weekend games, and the Wednesday game is five games in 6 days. So that's an awful lot to manage. Jay Johnson did discuss that, managing playing five games in 6 days with a collegiate roster.
One of the positives about the trip, at least as I kind of rewrote it out, is we used 14 pitchers and nobody threw twice. And there's very few staffs in the country that could accomplish that and win three games, you know, in four and playing three Power Five teams and one of the better mid-majors in the country. So I thought that showcased our depth, and then we're really going to have to count on that during this stretch here. And again, it's like this is not any kind of blowover weekend or anything. I mean, this team was a regional team, I think, that played LSU in 2021 in Central Connecticut. We're facing a very good pitcher tomorrow night and a team that has a veteran lineup. And they played Campbell incredibly tough last weekend, who's an NCAA tournament team every year. I think they had the lead late twice. So this is going to be a good weekend for us.
The Camels. Oh, the Campbell Campbells. They were here. Were they here? Did Campbell ever come here? Do you recall?
Not that I recall. They were in Knoxville in the regional last year, which might be why they're on your mind.
Okay, so maybe so. So LSU's going to play four games this weekend, and I know everyone is flipping a little bit about the strikeouts. Jay Johnson was asked about that. Are the strikeouts a concern?
There's actually a couple reasons why we're a little higher. We want to eliminate the ones that we shouldn't have. But we're going to have some. And, you know, I don't really want to elaborate on how and the why and the what, but I know the difference between the ones that are, I guess, what you would call okay or acceptable and the ones that aren't. We want to attack the ones that aren't and have those be a little bit better.
We talked about that a little bit after the game on Tuesday night. Yes, strikeouts are going to happen, but there's times where you got to put the ball in play. I think we talked about the situational in the sixth inning. You had runners at second and third with Brady Neal up and two outs in a scoreless game. You got to put the ball in play there. And I like Brady Neal a lot. Please don't misunderstand. Like, I think he has given you professional at-bats. I love his ability to hit to all fields. But that's just an example that comes to mind in a big spot. In the fourth inning, Tommy White led off with a double, and then they proceeded to strike out the side. You got to put the ball, like, you can't lead off with a double and have the inning end with old boy standing on second base. You got to be able to advance a runner and put a ball in play, put pressure on the defense. I think that's probably what he's alluding to. About the strikeouts as well, real quick. LSU currently is second in the SEC in strikeouts with 74. South Carolina has 77. Tennessee, also a pretty good team, has 72. So they're two behind LSU. But if you flip this, understand, like, at this point in the season, a lot of what your statistics are going to tell you are going to be a reflection of competition. For example, Alabama currently leads the SEC in batting average at 360. Alabama has played a weekend series against Richmond, a midweek game against Tennessee Tech, a midweek game against Tennessee Martin. They played a three-game series against High Point, and then a midweek game against Jacksonville State. That's not exactly the same gauntlet of four games that LSU just faced going to Round Rock and then Austin. So, yeah, I mean, I would expect you're going to see a little bit of a flip. And as you get into conference play, some of that is going to rectify itself, as you would anticipate. Right now, the only teams in the SEC that aren't hitting 300 as a team, like the team batting average, are Texas A&M at 264 and Vanderbilt at 253. That was audible, Muse. That's okay. Let me do this real quick. Last year, all right, so right now, 12 of the 14 teams in the league are hitting 300 as a team for their team batting average. Muse, you want to guess how many teams in the SEC last year finished the season with a 300 batting average? I didn't know this. I just pulled it up. How many finished the season with a team batting average over 300?
I think it was three.
I think you were wrong. It was one.
It was Tennessee. It was
Tennessee. A&M and LSU each hit 289, Vanderbilt 286, Georgia 284. My point is, there's 12 teams right now averaging 300. So a lot of that is just you don't have a big enough sample size. That's why it's averages. Averages will play out as the season goes along. So I'm not going to I'm just not going to overreact to it right now. I think we all agree. LSU's got really good hitters. There's some really good players in this team, and I think they're going to be just fine at the plate. One other thing, a couple more from Jay Johnson. Muse, can you please play number five? Okay, so this is Jay Johnson was asked about Trey Morgan playing in left. He's obviously been there since Tommy White's injury sort of necessitated it. Jay Johnson was asked, is Trey Morgan a long-term option in left? Here's what he said.
I think it's been out of necessity. Like, had Tommy not gotten hurt, he'd still be at first base. With that being said, I don't really have a lot of interest in not having Jared Jones hitting right now. And he's improved a lot defensively. Josh Jordan works with the first baseman, has worked hard with him, and I thought he played great over there for four games. And, you know, so it's just more of we take each game a day at a time. You find out about your team, but we're not trying to figure out our team, if that makes sense. And so, you know, it was a little bit of a personnel necessity, and Trey did a good job out there. He made a couple of good catches on Tuesday night. If we didn't have that versatility with Jared or with him, might have made this thing even a little more complicated than it is. But for me, it's just like, hey, let's make a couple adjustments and let's go to work.
I mean, think about it. If Trey Morgan was playing in the outfield, you'd be taking Jones out of the lineup, and you probably have Kling or Pearson out there and Morgan at first, but you'd have to remove Jones from the lineup so you could DH Tommy White. So, yes, it's out of necessity, but it's something that I know we've talked about for a year now, and a lot of you have pushed back against it, and I know I've kind of banged this drum loudly. Like, Trey Morgan's not going to be a first baseman. You don't put athletic guys at first base at the next level. You put Jared Jones at first base. I'm not saying he's not athletic, but you put the dude that's 6'4", 230, that looks like Soda Popinski. You put him at first base. You let him club homers and catch the ball. Like, that's what you do. It's a way to get another bat in the lineup. So Trey Morgan, and he's a lefty, so he can't play the left side of the infield. He's going to be an outfielder. That's what Trey Morgan's going to be at the next level. He's going to play in the outfield. And he's showing you the catch he made on the warning track on Tuesday night, going down to a knee. I mean, it's fantastic. So, yes, when Tommy White is healthy, this is easy. Tommy White goes to third. Trey Morgan goes to first. Jones DHs, and you put Kling or Pearson in the outfield spot. And that's your best lineup. I think you'd agree with that, that's your best lineup by far. But you don't have that option right now because Tommy White's not playing third base yet. Speaking of which, here was Jay Johnson on Tommy White if he would return to third this weekend.
I don't know that yet. He played catch on Monday for the first time, played a little bit of catch Tuesday, took tomorrow off. Don't really have an answer on that either way. We're hopeful. I mean, it's, you know, we're hopeful that all of them are at 100% and full strength, but we'll work that way back in the manner that it needs to. It's good having a good roster and depth that, it's pretty significant if you looked at it from the outset of how it would affect our team, and it really hasn't. Infield defense has been great with Ben and Jordan and Gavin. So Jared did a nice job over at first this weekend. Made some really good catches, made a good pick in the dirt. Trey, you know, coming in at the end of the game. So we feel like we can get through in a way that we can make sure he's healthy before he's thrown again.
To illustrate Jay Johnson's point about depth, think about last year at the end of the season when Jacob Berry went out and when Kay Doty had separated his shoulder. Think about how devastating that was to your team. The dramatic drop-off that happened when those two guys weren't available. You haven't really missed a beat because you got great options. That's what depth has done to this team. So get another game, another series, a long weekend, four games this weekend, then they'll play again in the midweek next week. So five games in 6 days for LSU coming up.
Well, just disappointing. You come out to start the second half, and we leave the ball there and give up an easy 15-footer, come down, turn it over, give them some momentum. They get it back to single digits. And I think they finally tied it right around 59, and we did mount a response there, and we were able to build the lead again, but we just weren't able to get enough stops. And then just unfortunately, we had back-to-back possession. We don't even get a shot at the goal because we turned the ball over. You know, it's a poor execution there.
They should have played Parker Edwards more. It's what they should have done. You kidding me? All my guy does is go out there, gets 6 minutes, two shot attempts. He drains two threes. He's averaging a point a minute. You know what I mean? You let Parker Edwards go run the floor. He's dropping a 40 burger last night. Book it. That'll happen. It's embarrassing, Matt McMahon. Senior night, you give the kid a start, you drop a couple plays, all he does is go bang, bang, 6 points. You got a lead, you got momentum, you got the crowd into it, and then you go, hey, thanks so much for getting us a lead. Take a seat, kid. What are we doing here, man? You ever heard of hot hand? Play the hot hand. All right, so I'm joking. But I might be serious. I might have convinced myself of this. We were at Oliver Twist last night for Scone and Tea, and the game started as we were finishing the show at 8, and we look up and Parker Edwards goes bang, bang. He's 2 for 2 from 3. And I'm like, you know what's sad? I told you this, Muse. What did I say yesterday at Oliver Twist? I want you to say it.
Uh-oh.
Never mind, Muse.
I don't remember.
I said, the worst part about this is that people are going to flood me on Twitter and other places and say, why hasn't Parker Edwards been
played
more?
Yeah.
Yeah. Please stop. Okay. It was great. They drew up two plays to get him open looks. He nailed them both. That was awesome. Please don't tell me Parker Edwards is your solution. Okay. Respect. Kid scored 25 in his first game. And what a way to go out. 25 in his first game against Southeastern. Remember, he scored 25 in like 11 minutes when they put him in late in that blow, and he just started raining. And then great way to start last night. What a memory for him to create. LSU last night. So, no, Parker Edwards is not the answer. But then again, you're so bad. Why not? Why not? Right? I mean, does it get to that point where you're like,
it can't get worse, could type it? You? No, it can't.
It really can't.
You're 2-15.
Yeah, it couldn't get worse. No. Why not? Give the kid 25 minutes. See what happens. But then again, I guess the flip side of it is, like, you legitimately want to give your team the best chance to win, and you want to play your best players, but you've done that this year and it hasn't gone well. Yes, I did watch the game. I know I don't really have much desire to analyze it. The end game execution was atrocious. They had an opportunity. And it's odd because one of the things they did in the pre-conference was when they were 11-1, they found themselves in a lot of really close games at the end of the game and executed to win, which was really encouraging at the time. And they've just completely fallen apart. The weird thing about last night is they had the bizarre one-off scenario they needed. LSU was 11 of 15 from 3 in the first half. I'm going to say that again. 11 of 15. They were 11 of 15. LSU, which is one of the worst offensive teams in college basketball, was 11 of 15 from 3 in the first half. For the game, they shot 50% from 3, and they made 20 of 22 free throws. They're one of the worst free throw shooting teams in the league. They made 20 of 22 free throws. Everything they needed to go right went right. Like, the ball was going in the hole, which has just not happened for this team very much this year. The ball was going in the hole. And they led by 13 at half. So, just for context, LSU is 323rd nationally in points per game. They are literally one of the worst. If you're doing stats and looking at the national average, and like where you fall in the national ranking, and your ranking starts with a 3, you're garbage. Like bad, 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 bad. 323rd in scoring. And they were 11 of 15 from 3 in the first half. They led by 13. And then in the second half, they decided they just wanted to turn it over 16 times and let Missouri do whatever they wanted and whatever. So LSU loses again. The regular season mercifully wraps up Saturday, 5 o'clock at Florida, and then the Tigers will get bounced after their first game in the SEC tournament, and mercifully the season will be over, and Matt McMahon can look to the future. But boy, I think many of you understand what he inherited and understand this was not going to be an easy year, and it has not been. But we also have not seen much improvement at all. And that's the concerning part. So, Matt McMahon's got to go recruit, man. You've got to go use NIL, use whatever you can, whatever you have at your luxury to go remake this roster, because you're running out there. The old Sylvester Croom line when he was coaching in Mississippi State said, "You ever been in a bear fight without a gun?" So they had a switch. Now they had a gun. Whenever he felt like he finally recruited that thing. Now he didn't, because they were never any good. But that's what LSU has been. They've been in a bear fight with a switch. And they need a gun. Got to give them this offseason. Okay, I'll do it for us here on a Friday edition of LSU Daily. Please subscribe up on your favorite podcast app. Rate us. Leave a review on iTunes. Let a friend know if they love the Tigers. We got you covered every single weekday here for about 30 minutes or less on LSU Daily.